This is a dramatization of an article called Popping Cops that's posted on the Outpost of Freedom webpage. It was an interview with John. This was conducted back in July 1999. So this is nearly 15 years ago. So you understand as you listen to this what the world was 15 years ago and the Kosovo War was going on, because that's a primary element in this. And without that background, it would be difficult otherwise to understand. Now, this is Gary Hunt, and I will be taking the role of Gary Hunt. And Kyle Reardon will be taking the role of John, the person that I interviewed back then. So we shall begin. John is an old friend. He is a combat veteran and well-versed in our country's heritage. I was talking with John just a few days ago, and we were discussing the events in Kosovo. I asked John if he would do another interview regarding that discussion when we completed that evening. He agreed to, and this is the interview. Well, John, welcome, and it's good to talk with you again.
Thanks, Gary. Good to be able to discuss things again.
Well, John, the other day when we were talking about doing this interview, you mentioned that there might be some things that we could learn from the Kosovo Liberation Army, the KLA. Why don't we start there?
Okay, well, a couple of years ago, we talked about McVeigh targeting the federal building. As I said then, we should target the sources of the problem. Although the government is the problem, the Federal Reserve System is the source of the power and influence that directs the government. We should also look at the frontline soldier in the war. You realize, I know from your writings, that you believe we are at war. I think that McVeigh made that sentiment very clear. Gary, you are a veteran. When you were in combat, was your target the government buildings of North Vietnam?
No, in my role, the target was the person trying to shoot me. I wasn't really a combat soldier. I was an airplane crew chief. We conducted no offensive actions except by aerial radio support or targeting. Risk generally came when the aircraft or the airfield was attacked. Maybe even a convoy was attacked. So any target I had presented itself to me.
Well, I think you have the idea. Whether you were an offensive or defensive soldier, your primary target is the frontline enemy soldier. Now, I mentioned the KLA on Kosovo. As you have pointed out in some of your articles, the KLA were assassinating policemen in Kosovo for nearly 2 years. The Serbs attempted to retaliate, but were looked on as the bad guy, at least by people like Clinton. But face it, for nearly 3 years, the KLA continued to kill police at every opportunity. They also killed the paramilitaries and Serbian army whenever the opportunity presented itself. They had the government frustrated to the point that the government had to start attacking people even remotely suspected of being KLA or harboring them.
Well, John, I think that if that happened here, many would claim that it was the government doing it just to encourage public support to pass more laws against guns.
Yes, I've read a lot of that recently. The high school shootings seem to have really fueled that fire. But think about it. Is there any patriot that couldn't be charged with a crime? Is there any person that couldn't be charged with a crime? Passing those laws is just a feel-good sort of thing. You've written about how you still have all your rights. As you said in your articles, you pity the cop that thinks you don't still have the right to bear arms. Those friends of yours, George and Linda, they weren't willing to give their rights up. They knew they still had them, but the government, with the power they have behind them, will deny those rights whenever they want. So, what good does another law do? I've often wondered if the naysayers that constantly espouse not acting to restore our lawful government are working for the unlawful one. Do you think that the founders would have submitted to such illogical arguments? Where do you think that we would be today if they had?
Well, you're right. The hardcore of the founders were Sam Adams, John Hancock, and James Otis. The rest, even Washington, had constantly pled for negotiated solutions. There was always opposition to any form of force. But if I remember correctly, the Sons of Liberty and the other small gangs, even in the southern colonies, would take more aggressive action, especially against tax collectors.
That's right. The tax collectors could call the king's soldiers to seize property if taxes weren't paid. The soldiers, however, worked only under the direction of the civil authority. They didn't make decisions, use their rifles, or any force, unless directed to by the governor or an agent of the king. It was those agents who directly affected their lives that were the frontline troops, the enemy which was first sought out and slain.
But wait a minute. There weren't that many killings. Most of the activity was against property, houses, offices, etc., wasn't it?
Yes, it was, but there was very little regard for life. If they were going to burn someone's house down, they usually vandalized it and then set it afire. They didn't make anyone leave or physically remove them. If they stayed in the house, it was at their own risk. And many died in those fires. Also, many died of the tar and feathering they received. But times have changed. Very few colonists were killed by the king's forces. Quite a bit different from today, wouldn't you say?
Yes. But, well, do you really think that there will be support for killing cops?
There was in Kosovo. The Albanians were willing to put up with quite a bit, and seldom, if ever, turned in a KLA member. That's why so many civilians were killed by the Serbs. If they had a group of people and knew that at least one was KLA, if the others didn't talk, they killed them all. It didn't seem to break down the fortitude of the Albanians. It seemed to strengthen their resolve.
So do you think that it would have the same effect in this country?
Gary, you know that there are still some who want to blame everything on the government. You know that there are a lot of people who think that things will change through the voting process. I've seen many articles on the internet where people still believe that if they can circumnavigate the judicial maze, they can get justice. Are you asking me if those people will support the kind of action that is necessary to get our country back? To them, the answer is no. But remember that 200 years ago, only a small handful believed that force would remove the burden the king had put on the people. Once the reality struck home that force would be the method of change, they reconsidered their old ideas and supported the cause. But remember, too, that it was a very slow process. It never was a majority then, and it will never be a majority to affect this sort of change.
What sort of people would look favorably on this sort of action?
The people that I know look favorably on action. You don't read about all the bombings and events that are going on every day. It is only when the press can play something up that they do. You've read about the hundreds of bombings that occur in this country each year. Do you read about them on the internet? There is probably at least one bombing every day in this country, but nobody finds out about them, except maybe those that live in the same town. They know that these bombings and attacks against police are going on. Nobody seems to get caught, unless they make a stupid mistake. But that's not the real point of this type of action.
Yes, I've read the annual reports that point out how many bombings there are every year. I've wondered, but I guess I realize that the press doesn't cover it unless it serves a purpose. And the police and FBI don't want to know how many unsolved bombings, don't want us to know how many unsolved bombings there are. It seems like when they can ID someone, then it hits the press. But you say this is not the point. What is the point of this?
Well, from a tactical standpoint, let's suppose that you are a policeman. What happens when policemen start getting shot in random attacks?
Well, I would guess they would probably start putting two officers in a car to protect against it.
Right. And many places have put two men in every patrol car. But what happens as it continues and becomes even more common?
I think I'm beginning to get the picture. If you took the job because it paid well and gave me power, I would have second thoughts if the risk became too great.
You got the idea. If people were to start popping cops, then cops would start to think twice before they continued don the force. Of course, there would probably be an overreaction to this at first. There might be more aggressive thinking that would protect them. But then, maybe that is what is happening now. I think, though, that they're just underqualified for their jobs. The government has put so many cops on the street that they have got to be running out of qualified people, just like any profession. Gary, you're a surveyor. Could anybody be a surveyor with proper training?
Well, they could probably learn to survey and pass the exams, but there are a lot of people who have passed the exams, gotten registered, and still aren't very good surveyors.
Do you think that the same is true with cops?
Well, some of the cops that I know seem to have a good attitude for their work, but they are arrogant and stick together. They will stick up for a friend, whether he is a cop or not. I guess, though, that there has got to be a limit, like you said, as to how many people are qualified to be good cops. But then you know that I don't believe that there is any such thing as a good cop.
How many of those you know are really willing to risk their lives to help people?
Hey, I don't think that I know any that would match that mold that existed years ago.
So, do you think that they might find other work if the risk became too great?
Well, I would think that it would be very likely. You said popping cops. That comes out to PC. I just realized the irony of it.
Can't think of a better way to describe it. But back to where we were. What would happen then if cops were getting taken out one at a time, here, there, all over the country? One in Detroit, a few days later, one in Chicago, a few days later, one in Miami, and one in Dallas. Each time, different bullets, different MO, nothing similar except the result, another dead cop. Any cell could do one job every 6 months. The likelihood of getting caught would be almost non-existent.
You heard about this guy Benjamin Smith in Indiana, didn't you?
Yes, he was a loose cannon. There have always been people like that. It seems like they have a death wish and no sense.
Wouldn't popping cops have the same consequence?
No. The difference is targeting. That's what we're talking about here. Everybody would know, whether they admitted it or not, why it was happening. It wouldn't be murder. It would be killing. Killing the enemy, just like in war. That is the objective, isn't it?
Yes, but if the enemy is the government...
Gary, did you read Jack McLam's Vampire Killer 2000?
Yes, a number of times.
Who is always there if there is an IRS seizure, a federal service of process, or even around the perimeter at Waco? Cops are the tools, the front line, the cannon fodder for the government. If they seize the rifles in California, who will seize them? Should we concern ourselves with them just because they haven't participated in a direct action? Should we not shoot enemy soldiers who haven't yet shot at us? Are troop trains of raw recruits military targets?
I see what you mean.
Gary, remember, a long time ago, you told me that you used to look at cops and wonder if their family would miss them. Then after Waco, you told me that you didn't care anymore about what their families would feel.
Yes, and I think that I still feel the same. But then I'm supposed to be asking the questions.
Okay, ask away.
Well, I guess I'm sort of at a loss right now. This is a lot to digest. I guess that most of it has been there all along, but I've never really thought it out like this.
I think that most of us who really want the country back have all of those pieces inside. Our conversation the other day got me going on it again. I think that time, you know, in history, in life, has a part of what makes sense or not. Our conversation brought up the same thoughts I'd had before, but they came together in a different way. Kept trying to resolve it, but it kept coming out the same way. I think that is how a man in history is supposed to work.
John, I'm going to have some more questions, I'm sure, as time goes on. Are you going to be willing to answer more about this later on?
Sure. I don't know if I'll have answers to all your questions, but I'll try. Same rules, of course.
Okay, John. Thanks very much. And again, you've provoked a lot of thought. Thanks. Stay safe.
You too, Gary.
That is the end of the interview.